Welcome to the SISA Health Psychology Division podcast. Today we'll be speaking to Megan Wasalisa about premenstrual dysphoric disorder. Welcome to the podcast, Megan.
Thank you so much, Martin. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, yes. Lovely having you on the podcast. So you wrote an amazing thesis titled Exploring the Health-Related Quality of Life of Women with Premenstrual Dysphoric Disorder. So let us start the podcast by discussing what premenstrual dysphoric disorder is. Would you mind defining premenstrual dysphoric disorder, or PMDD, for our listeners?
No problem. So I think for the duration of the podcast, if it's okay, we can just call it PMDD. So colloquially, PMDD is known as a more severe form of premenstrual syndrome, or PMS. However, it differs to PMS in the severity of symptoms and the impact of symptoms on women's ability to function optimally. So symptoms can range, and they can be physical symptoms or psychological symptoms. And these symptoms appear during the late luteal phase, which is normally the time period between ovulation and when menstruation starts.
Huh, that's actually quite interesting, very informative as well. Can you also tell us a bit about what drew you to this type of research, researching PMDD?
Yes. So when I started my master's journey, as it were, I knew that I wanted to focus on women's health. And through conversations with fellow women who had diagnoses from endometriosis to polycystic ovary syndrome, their stories and their narratives were always very similar. So I did a bit of a deep dive into women's health and current research, well, current research in 2020 on what women's health was talking about. And I came across the topic of PMDD, or premenstrual dysphoric disorder, and found that there was very minimal research on the topic. And that was what prompted me to focus on PMDD for my thesis.
Thank you for clarifying that for us. As a researcher interested in the field, how is it like for you to hear the firsthand experiences of individuals diagnosed with PMDD?
So it was very disheartening, I think, to hear the different narratives, especially the narratives regarding misdiagnosis and then also missed diagnosis. So I obviously talk about this in my thesis. So we have women who discussed being misdiagnosed with something else. So the PMDD symptoms were then attributed to a different disorder. And then misdiagnosis, which is the overlooking of PMDD as a potential diagnosis for women's symptoms. So it was very interesting to hear those stories, and then also to hear that it was a very universal experience for women. So my thesis had an international sample. So I had women from across the world who were participating in my study. And the experiences relating to healthcare were quite common, irrespective of the geographical position. So that was quite eye-opening and also quite disheartening.
Okay, so how did those experiences shape or change your perceptions of the nature of PMDD?
So I think it shaped my perception of PMDD by allowing me to understand the complexities attached to stigma of PMDD. So when you have a diagnosis of PMDD, you have a mental health diagnosis, because PMDD is listed under mood disorders in the DSM-5. And then you also have, so you have stigma attached to that via mental health stigma. Then you also have stigma coming from women's health and the menstruating women and the hysterical women, which I think we will get into a bit later. So you have stigma coming from that point of view as well. So it opened my eyes quite a bit to just how complex PMDD can actually be for someone that is diagnosed with the disorder.
That's a very interesting point. The PMDD can bring about stigma both as a diagnosable psychological condition as well as from a menstrual or hormonal standpoint. So I'm quite curious, when you were conducting your research, what particularly stood out to you as the most interesting finding regarding PEMDD?
So for myself, I think that the most interesting was the personification of PMDD. So the labeling of PMDD as an abuser, as a monster by women, that definitely stood out to me. So within my thesis, I go into how women described their PMDD, their relationship with their PMDD as well. And the relationship between women and PMDD was often described as quite damaging. Participants described PMDD as an aggressor and as a monster. And there were parallels drawn between experiencing PMDD and being in an abusive relationship and likening PMDD to the abuser in that relationship. And then on the other side, we had, or I had women who were self-critical and expressed feeling guilty about how they treated their partners during times of PMDD symptom expression. So there again, it was that they were labeling themselves as an abuser as a result of their PMDD symptoms. One participant went so far as to label herself as an abuser because of how she treated her partner during times of PMDD symptom expression. So, yeah, the personification of PMDD was definitely a interesting finding, and also a very eye-opening finding with regards to my research.
Wow, it definitely does seem like PMDD symptom expression is quite complex. From what I can gather from what you said, it can impact not only the person diagnosed with PMDD, but as well as those who are around them. So that's actually quite interesting.
Yeah, and to if I may just build on that as well, Martin, there was also, and maybe this is a good place to just have a little bit of a trigger warning, there was also a few participants that went so far as to say that they were participating in self-harm as a result of their PMDD symptoms. So definitely when it came into the psychological functioning, the depressive symptoms, suicidal ideations and things like that, that definitely came out, and I obviously do discuss it a bit more in the thesis as well.
This actually relates to my next question. Well, you highlighted that persons living with PMDD encounter issues with their psychological functioning as well. Can you please expand on that?
Of course. So participants reported experiencing a variety of symptoms regarding their psychological functioning. A few, if I may just list a few, were intrusive thoughts, suicidal ideation, as I said, depressed mood, anger and rage, anxiety, and mild dissociations. So just to go a little bit further into it, under in my thesis, one of the sub-themes entitled I Can't Trust My Judgment, I describe how participants' anxiety negatively affected their rational decision-making and concentration abilities. And obviously that then further impaired the occupational areas of life, such as their work responsibilities. And going further, self-esteem and self-image were also factors that were reported to be negatively impacted on by women's PMDD symptoms. Symptoms such as intrusive thoughts, depressed mood, mild dissociation were listed, just to name a few, as symptoms that negatively impacted on women's self-esteem and self-image. And as a result of this, some participants actually reported avoiding mirrors as a result of the symptoms' impact on their self-esteem and self-image.
This is very informative, actually, because I was aware that PMDD typically leads to anxiety and depressive mood, but I didn't know that it included intrusive thoughts, as well as, you said, reduced rational decision-making. Huh, that's an eye-opening finding. Well, to your knowledge, are interpersonal relationships of individuals living with PMDD impacted in any way, shape, or form by their diagnosis outside of perhaps it impacting their work or self-esteem?
Yeah, definitely. So interpersonal relationships are 100% impacted by a PMD diagnosis. And if we look specifically at romantic relationships, women in my study reported that their PMDD diagnosis actually had quite a positive impact on their romantic relationships. And it did so by creating better partner understanding. And then also it created feelings of relief by both the partner and the participants when receiving a PMDD diagnosis. So overall, the PMDD diagnosis was taken as quite a positive thing when we talk about interpersonal relationships, specifically with regards to romantic relationships.
Wow. I'm sure our listeners will be taking a lot of this information to heart. It's very informative. Also, your research does touch on gender bias in healthcare when it comes to diagnosis and treatment of PMDD. So can you please explain to our listeners what exactly does that entail?
Of course. So if we look at current research assessing gender differences in patient experiences, women were often found to report more negative experiences than men within healthcare settings. And these patient experiences were linked to quality of care, treatment communication, and behavioral treatment, so overall treatment from healthcare practitioners. Looking at gender bias healthcare research and narratives of participants in my study, when you compare the two, it was very, very similar. Women reported feeling chronically overlooked by healthcare practitioners in my study and went so far as to label the experience as being medically gaslit. Now, medical gaslighting can be described as the invalidation of patient experiences by healthcare professionals. And this was quite a common experience that was reported by quite a few participants in my study. And if we look at PCOS and endometriosis study, it reports quite similar findings regarding symptom dismissal by healthcare practitioners and often being dismissed and often having their complaints and symptoms dismissed. So it appears that there is some sort of pattern within women's health research regarding this chronic dismissal that is experienced when it comes to women's health and women-related complaints.
Well, I hadn't thought about that before. I am curious about the medical gaslighting, as you called it. So with symptom dismissal and medical gaslighting, I'm wondering if it could even affect the rate at which PMDD gets diagnosed.
I mean, I definitely think that it could, because the negative experiences relating to healthcare negatively impacted on women's health-seeking behaviors. Hmm. And when something negatively impacts women's health-seeking behaviors, the chances of their symptoms going misdiagnosed can be higher. So I definitely think that it could impact on the rate of diagnosis with regards to PMDD.
That's a very compelling argument. So in your research, you highlighted the culture surrounding PMDD as somewhat problematic. Mm-hmm. Can you please expand on that for our listeners?
Okay. So culture formed quite an important part of the theoretical framework for my thesis. And when discussing culture with my participants, stigma relating to menstruation and menstruating women were often brought up. So stigma emerged as an important factor, as stigma resulted in feelings of shame for women. Also, women reported that stigma and stereotypes surrounding premenstrual symptoms shaped their understanding of premenstrual disorders prior to their PMDD diagnosis. And if we look at how women described their understanding of the concept of a menstruating woman within their social context, terms such as hysterical, being in hysterics, and crazy were described as labels often associated with menstruating women. So you can see that often the social context that my participants found themselves in, the overarching stereotype understanding or misconception regarding menstruating women was negative.
So when I was reading through your thesis, I remember reading a quotation from one of your study participants about the jokes and stigma men have about menstruation. That was something along the lines of, if it bleeds for a week and doesn't die, we can't trust it.
Yes.
That's actually interesting about the negative connotation or perception of menstruation within a specific gender demographic. Pretty interesting way of viewing this type of medical diagnosis. So yes, yeah. I do have one more question for you. What would you say are the possible cultural, psychosocial, or structural barriers that prevent them from receiving the help that they need as persons living with PMDD?
Okay, great. So with regards to structural barriers, from a geographical point of view, women in my study described finding it very difficult to find a practitioner near them that was knowledgeable in PMDD. And then also from a health insurance or medical aid standpoint, some participants reported that they had health insurance, but that the healthcare practitioners covered by their health insurance plan were not knowledgeable in PMDD. So this resulted in participants either paying out of pocket or withdrawing completely from seeking medical support because of financial strain. So that, yeah, structural barriers, that is how it can discourage or disadvantage someone who is trying to seek help for their PMDD symptoms. And then relating to cultural and psychosocial barriers, as I spoke about earlier, stigma relating to menstruating women and premenstrual disorders often resulted in women experiencing feelings of shame with regards to their PMDD. And if we go a bit further, that shame can also negatively impact on women's health-seeking behaviors and also was reported to act as kind of a mental barrier for women when potentially accessing healthcare support services for their PMDD-related symptoms.
That's pretty fascinating.
Well, I'm sure we can go on and on talking about PMDD, but unfortunately we have come to the end of our podcast. So in closing, I would like to thank you, Megan, for thoroughly informing and teaching us and our listeners about the nature of premenstrual dysphoric disorder, also known as PMDD. Hopefully will go a long way in informing male medical practitioners about the realities of PMDD and in reducing the experience and prevalence of medical gaslighting in healthcare settings for women. But before I let you go, do you have any parting remarks you would like to share with our listeners?
Honestly, nothing from my side. I'm just extremely happy to have this opportunity to talk about PMDD, to be able to extend some of the knowledge that I gained through my master's thesis and to bring a little bit more awareness to our listeners and to potentially anyone else regarding what PMDD is. You know, hopefully this prompts one person who's experiencing symptoms to go and seek help. So thank you so much for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
No problem at all. Yeah. Thank you so much. Well, it's been lovely having you here, Megan, and I wish you all the best going forward. This was the CISA Health Psychology Division podcast. Until the next time, bye-bye.